Good morning, everyone. I'm very pleased to be here with you this morning to share with you my work on using social media to inform public health promotion and practice. And I have no relationships to disclose. Social media, in its simplest form, can really be driven by these characteristics. Web 2.0 and e-health sort of embody this emerging technology that allows for a lot of participation, openness, interactivity, and modifiable displays of information. In 2009, we saw that a lot of people are using the internet to access health information. Over 73% of teens use social networking websites, 31% access for health, dieting, or fitness information, and 17% on drug use, depression, and sexual health information. My research considers, while not to the exclusion of others, the unique context of adolescents. As a target population, adolescents are part of a mobile constituency, and it's getting harder and harder to reach them using traditional forms of media. But because we're understanding more and more the power of social media to influence norms, there is such potential now to reinforce healthy behaviors among youth by leveraging what we can do with social media with what we know works in terms of health communication. The challenge is that there's really no standard practice for analyzing, for this type of analysis in my case, analyzing Twitter data. The goal of my work here is to really provide an introductory framework for understanding how user-generated social media can inform targeted strategies for promoting adolescent health. And a lot of what we know about adolescent health we've really gleaned from observational and self-report methods, which we know suffer from some biases. Stone and Schiffman introduced the concept of EMA, or ecological momentary assessment, to really describe any phenomenon as it's occurring in its natural setting. So tweets, I thought, were really good candidates for this concept of EMA because in theory, the tweet should be highly correlated with a person's affective state at the moment the tweet is conveyed. So then the fundamental assertion is that this analysis can really help us determine how people assess risk and make health-related decisions. So my decision to focus on a specific topic was guided by this rationale. We know that the consequences of poor reproductive health indicators are complex, costly, and long-term. But given the uptake of social media, we know that we as public health professionals have this prime opportunity to really craft effective messages and employ technologies that truly resonate with teens and young adults. Social media, again, can address the limitations of conventional health communication strategies by establishing interactive channels, providing contextualization, and creating health information on demand. User-generated social media contains cues for health professionals, and our call to action is to really develop more effective, more harmonious messaging tools that are consistent with the ways that people think, talk, and interact. So my presentation now focuses on two things. It's a combination of really content analysis and visualization tools. Again, the research tells us that teens are on Twitter. It's highly accessible. They have easy on-the-go access, and it's a very rich and robust framework for exploring social interactions and conversation. The search term that I selected was birth control. I chose it because it's very relevant as my criteria for all tweets that I collected. It has strong implicit links to sexual and reproductive health. It's a good starting point for examining knowledge, attitudes, and beliefs. And finally, it consistently performed well and returned multiple entries for each search. I wanted to get a broad sample, but I also wanted my analysis to have a comparative feature. So what I did, I took one state from each of the 10 HHS regions. I established a geocode parameter to collect tweets from four specific locations within each state. I specified the latitude, longitude, and a search radius of about 50 miles. And I collected this information in three-day intervals over 21 consecutive days, and all of this information was written into a search operator through Twitter's API, or application programming interface. But because of their composition, tweets can be very difficult to prepare for data analysis, But in doing so, my objectives were really to minimize all of this extraneous data. I removed hashtags, hyperlinks, retweets, to really achieve better standardization, but still maintain that semantic integrity. I used a grounded theory approach, which was proposed by Glaser and Strauss, used theoretical coding to look at my complete data set of tweets. I asked the question, what is this an example of? So using previous studies as a precedent, I identified three basic constructs and then several ancillary themes. Transposing risk and responsibility is concerned with how people interpret risk and assign responsibility. It's how they convey expectations and negotiate decisions related to contraception. Disincentivizing pregnancy and childbearing often involves using recall and experiences to assert your posture or to try to influence someone or to influence the attitudes of others with regard to childbearing. Projecting motherhood has a lot to do with intendedness. It's displaying a quality or an emotion that is in some way relevant to their conscious planning to become pregnant or to become a mother. So broadly considered, these concepts really illustrate a host of issues that likely resonate with our target population. But dissected, when they're taken apart, they really provide opportunities and key entry points for immediate intervention. So the second part of my analysis has to do with visualization. We can visualize different concepts pulled from Twitter and extract meaning in order to show interrelated concepts from a defined corpus of tweets. A word cloud, for example, refers to a specific type of text visualization where the most frequently used words are shown with greater prominence, or they're weighted, in a visual representation like this to illustrate strong relationships and dominant themes. By looking at the composition of words related to a certain topic, users can gain a really quick impression of the main points in a text sample. So, comparing word clouds from different data sets could provide an immediate comparison of the most important themes. Sentiment analysis is another visual technique for ascertaining opinions or attitudes central to a concept. These analytics offer fast and effective ways to merge public opinion data and extract meaningful information, but it's difficult to assess the validity of many of these tools, especially because they're in the very early stages of development. Twitter Sentiment is a utility developed by researchers out at Stanford that extracts sentiments from tweets using a combination of positive and negative classifiers that were obtained through natural language processing and machine learning algorithms. Performance statistics support this platform as a way of exploring sentiment. It has about an 80% accuracy rate. But what I'm most excited about is this utility called Luminoso. There's a bit of a substantial learning curve associated with it, but it's a sophisticated tool for generating abstract conclusions about the interrelatedness of different concepts. It's comprised of a couple different levels, and I'll try to unpackage it here for you. Under the MIT Media Lab, you have Open Mind Common Sense, which is this general forum for people who are looking to contribute knowledge. So within that, it becomes part of a project called ConceptNet that houses all of this knowledge. But the element that makes Luminoso so powerful is what's called analogy space. And analogy space is really, it facilitates active reasoning. It communicates, in a sense, with ConceptNet, but it reduces the dimensionality of the input. It eliminates data, much like I tried to do in my original analysis. But analogy space is the software that identifies large-scale patterns and organizes ideas into categories to generally predict knowledge. So the final layer, which is Luminoso, really maps out how analogy space organizes this information. And so what can it do? Again, it visualizes the semantic data that you input. And what you're about to see on the next part of the presentation is really a visual network consisting of nodes and vectors around a central concept, which was birth control. So this is what it looks like. My original analysis took two independent data sets from Massachusetts and New Jersey. It combines them into one, and it's a little bit hard to represent here, but points that are further away from the origin, so birth control, I promise you, is somewhere in there, but points that are further away from that are considered more relevant. So the semantic network has a lot of different dimensions, but you can only see a few of them at a time. You can grab a certain concept when you're actually in the program. You can click on a node and you can drag it around using your mouse. The projection then rotates and stretches, and similar concepts then come along with it. So comparing two additional data sets, contrary to what was expected, the tweets containing the word birth control were not predominantly health-focused. These analyses, for me, were particularly enlightening in the sense that they were helpful in identifying key circles of influence and really had some strong socio-political undertones. But I think to comment more definitively on Luminoso's potential to really contribute to health research, we would need to, of course, perform additional analyses. But I will say that it does allow the investigator to really gain a very quick impression of the main correlations in a text sample, and it's a very adjunct tool for qualitative researchers who are exploring approaches and testing preliminary data. So what is the public health benefit? We know that efforts to promote behavior change can be strengthened using complementary strategies, but that these strategies should consider the underlying attitudes and beliefs that dictate behavior. Studying user-generated social media content, then, is a proposed method for determining knowledge, attitudes, and beliefs in real time. The applications that I've highlighted today are experimental techniques for fusing together information to reveal those really unique correlations that you might otherwise miss by using routine statistical analyses. And again, these tools are really instrumental in the formative stages of public health programming and planning. And it's really important that we continue to invest time in exploring the power of these tools and their utility. But specifically drawn from my analyses, practice might focus on strategies to improve or modify how birth control is perceived by adolescents. So now we have this tremendous opportunity as public health professionals to advocate for more synergistic advances in health and technology because we see the connection. The applications I described can be further refined and more rigorously studied, but I do think that many of my observations suggest that we can use social media to develop new approaches for promoting sexual health and really capitalize on the technology as a way of connecting teens and young adults with the vital health information they need. Thank you.